Okay, so my name is Tim Jones, and I'm conducting this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust and the One Another Project. It's the 14th of August 2009, and the time is 5:15 in the afternoon. Can you tell us your name, your age, and where you come from, please?
Well, my name is Fleur Louise James, and I come from Wales. I live in just outside Aberystwyth. I've lived there for about 25 years. Before that, I was living in London, and I used to work at the Tate Gallery and several other places in London as a photographer. And I moved out there for a job in the Royal Commission Ancient Monuments as a photographer.
That's lovely, thank you.
Yeah.
How was it you found out about the One Another Project?
I think I must have read it in the newspaper or in a magazine or something. Perhaps it was the Weekend Sunday magazine or something, and I picked that up. And then I noticed it and went on the website and thought, aha, what on earth? I didn't really expect to get a place, to be perfectly honest, but I felt that it was a good idea. And I still think, actually, it is a very good idea if that fourth plinth could be saved for anybody who wishes to go up there and express themselves. And it's obviously it requires a certain amount of maintenance. We've got the crew here and the security and the health and safety and the events happening around Trafalgar Square. And it is the best part of the year, season-wise. But nevertheless, I think it's a very good platform for visual expression, because you have Speaker's Corner for people who want to talk. Doesn't mean you can't talk on the plinth, it's just that as a focus, it's very good. And also it's very good for people to go up there and do what they want, not necessarily entertain, although if I could sing, I would sing. If I could play a musical instrument, I would play a musical instrument, but I can't, so I'm going to do some painting, which is what I really like doing and haven't done for a very long time, and I'm not very good at it anymore, or if I ever was. But that doesn't matter, because whatever I paint, it's to go in my lounge as curtains, because I want to see it. I don't consider myself good enough to frame it, but I would like to see it. So I've organised some material that will hang in my lounge and will cover the plinth, and I will be drawing, when I get up there I'll see, but the idea is to draw little icons like the National Gallery, little people and buses and the fountain, and who are representative of these things rather than great works of art. And then to put some footprints across on the plinth, paint my feet, because that's me on the plinth. And I will pace out my footprints on the plinth, just as a representative of me on the plinth, and that piece of material will have been on the plinth with me on it. And hopefully it won't be so awful that I won't want to hang it up. That's what I'm doing it for. It's actually just for me, because I don't really think anyone would want to buy it or anything. I mean, it did occur to me that I could perhaps auction it for charity, but then I thought, well, no, I don't think anybody really wants it, and perhaps I'll just do this for me, just because I've worked all my life, and I've had children, and I've done a lot of things for everybody else. So it'd be, it'd be something that I've done for me. And it'd be quite good to say that, look, that's what I've done. And if it's not so brilliant, that's okay. Because I can look at it and think, well, never mind. I can forgive myself for not being very good. I'm a great believer that if you can forgive yourself, then you can forgive other people, which makes you more tolerant. So to have something around that you've done that's actually not that brilliant reminds you of where, of that you're not you know, brilliant at everything, and nor is anybody else. And you have to learn to give people leeway and just generally forgive. That's all.
So how did you feel when you received the email to say that you'd been allocated a spot on the
pen? Oh, golly gosh. Well, I haven't been well recently, so I have arthritis, so I wasn't, because it was some weeks ago now, and I thought, oh, that's really nice, oh, will I be up for it physically? And then I thought, well, yes, of course I will be. So I said, yes, you know, because I want to do it, so. And, you know, if anything terrible happened and I couldn't do it, well, that's so be it, you know. So I immediately said, yes, I'll do that. I'll actually do that. But I didn't tell anybody for some weeks, because it's a very personal thing. And people said, oh, what would you do? And I just had no idea what I was going to do. It took me ages to think of something. Something that I was comfortable with, because you go through all the, well, I could entertain people, or I could dress up, or I could recite a poem, or, and they all sounded, for me, not terribly original. Or, in fact, the first things I thought of, were, because I am essentially a photographer, was to take photographs of everybody else watching me, and then I thought, well, that's a bit naff, because then everybody went and did it. Anyway, I thought, no, don't do that. That's tedious. And who wants the photographs anyway? So I thought, no. And I thought, well, let off some helium balloons. And then someone said, well, they're not very environmentally friendly. And I thought, oh, that's true, actually. So I thought, maybe not that. And after that, I was a bit stumped. So I just sort of thought about it. I quite like the idea of icons, because actually I would really like to be a cartoonist. I'm not good at drawing, but I would like to be. And I love cartoons, and I love the way people, cartoonists, can pick out features of people's faces, and they just put them down in a few lines, and you know who it is. I think that's extremely clever. I do like portraits, which people, people's faces, I find fascinating. I was on the tube yesterday, and I just sat and was watching all these people, because I come from Wales, you see, so it was a bit sparse. And you don't really see that many people so close for long periods of time. And I thought, you know, little old ladies go to the seaside, they go to a cafe, and they just watch people walk by. And I thought, well, as a holiday, I could come to London and sit on the tube all day and just look at people. I have to be a bit careful, though, because it can make some people uncomfortable. But I just enjoy looking at people's faces and the way they dress and what they do, and especially now it's so multicultural. Absolutely fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. It's wonderful. It's better than a TV, really, just watching people get on and off and where they're going and how they behave and talk and present themselves to the people they're with, or they don't. Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, well, what would you say kind of the best bits there? Why do you think you're so fascinated by the way people look?
Oh, because basically, we're all theoretically born the same, you know, two eyes, nose, and mouth, and ears, but look what we all become. The difference is extraordinary. Even just in, say, one race, one culture, what age does to people, how it changes their face, how their personality has stamped their face, the worry lines, or anything like that. Or the aggression, perhaps. Or what they've done, people who drink a lot, what that does to your face, people who are ill, people who are young and healthy and have no cares, or like yourself. You know, the face shows everything about their way of life and how they've lived. what life has done to them. And so it's just the variety, extraordinary variety. I mean, it's like you're interviewing me now here for this. I think that's why the project's so interesting. And this interview, you interview each person and then you see what they do. If you could actually just set off a carriage on the tube and grab a person as they come on and say, right, give me an interview, let me take your photograph. But of course, you can't do that. It's security, and that's very, well, it's not very, very nice, is it, to be grabbed and ringed full of all your personal secrets or whatever. But and the other thing about being on the plinth, which is quite, is to make yourself very vulnerable. I mean, you're not getting paid, you know, you have to fund this yourself, you have to get here. And coming from Aberystwyth, it's quite an expedition, you know, with my kids and everything, and where am I going to stay? And I have friends in London I haven't seen for ages, so it's actually very nice. It's lovely. Actually, it's a good excuse to come. So you make, and you sign all these forms saying, yes, you can do whatever you want with my life. And you think, oh my God, what will anyone do with this? And interviews, gosh, what do you say at an interview? I mean, I'm a very mediocre person in life with no special achievements. So, you know, I'm very possibly typical of your average person who's just really managed to survive doing in life, doing hopefully something that they liked doing, which maybe is an achievement in itself, really.
Tell us about the visual arts. How did you get into photography and painting? You said you did some painting
a while back. Oh, well, when I was young, long time ago, I'm 52. I didn't mention that, I'm 52. A couple of weeks ago, I was 52. I just love painting. I mean, maybe I was just playing. Maybe I'm a frivolous nature person. I just like playing. So I enjoyed painting. And I did a foundation course at Plymouth Art College and thought about doing graphics, but was veered into fine art. And I did start a fine art degree. Halfway through the first year, I realised that I was completely insane doing this degree because I really didn't want to be a poor artist in a garret. And perhaps I thought maybe I'm not really very good, and this was a bit of a stupid thing to do. So, and they didn't like me there anyway. I wasn't very anarchistic or anything, but they didn't like me. So, and I thought, well, it's very basic. I thought, well, what can I do that someone will pay me for that I'll enjoy? And it was either going to be ceramics or photography. And it just turned out to be photography. So I went traipsing down back to Plymouth and I did a photography diploma and really enjoyed it. Met some great people. The course I was on had people of all ages, from 17 to 35, 40 in age, from all different backgrounds. That was wonderful. That was really nice. It was great, because when I did the fine art, I was just in a room full of 18-year-olds, which is very tedious. We're all very tedious, 18s. I hope you're not 18.
Thank you.
But, and they were all different, from different backgrounds. It was great. It was really nice to meet all these people from different backgrounds, and I really enjoyed it. And after that, I came to London. I worked as a medical photographer at St. Thomas's, and then I went to work for Birkbeck College, London University, and then I got a job in the Tate Gallery, which was wonderful, and I still know the people there, or a couple of them anyway, when people move around. And I was going to see him this afternoon, Dave Clark, who runs the department, but he had a family emergency, which is a great shame, but I'll see him again. And it was a great place to work, it's lovely. All the people there, wonderful. I really enjoyed it, really enjoyed it. But this job came up in Aberystwyth, and as soon as I saw it, I thought, yep, that's me, I'm going to get that. So I did. So I went off there, and I've been there ever since. But my job has changed quite a lot. I went up there to take photographs on location, which I did for some years, and then I had children, which meant I couldn't really disappear every other week. So I did studio work, and then a lot of archive work. It gives you an idea of, in the studio as well. And then everything went digital. So now I digitise the department of digitising images for the archive. And on the website of the Royal Commission's website, which is called Cove Lane. It's not what I originally wanted to do. It's still very interesting. I work with images, I'm very lucky. But digital photography is not what I wanted to do, because I came from the art side, the artistic side. I enjoyed the darkroom and the optics and the chemistry and the physics and the logistics and the practical problems and the formulas, and I just enjoyed all that. The mathematics of it. There's quite a lot of mathematics in it. But I don't have that anymore, and it's all, I never thought I would end up looking at computer screens ever. But that's what so many people have done. So I'm one of many people who suddenly found themselves opposite a computer. Yes, that's an interesting journey. It's not finished. I shall do something else. But children do take up a vast amount of your life. And it's funny, at the end of the day, no matter how many bits of art you produce or don't produce or photographs you take, I suppose, I must sound really crass actually, but your mother would agree with me, that at the end of the day, you have produced however many children, and they are your life's work. They are everything that you've put in, that is it. And everything else is really peripheral.
Tell us about your family a little bit.
Oh, my family. My son is 20. He's doing an engineering degree in Southampton, and he's coming up to be in the square. He's doing a summer placement in Portsmouth for the MOD, and he's lovely. He's a delight. He's an absolute delight. We're very similar, so I know what he's thinking, which annoys him terribly. My daughter is 18. She's just finished doing her A-levels at Cheetham School of Music. She plays the clarinet and piano, and is going on to do a music degree. And both of them are very hard workers. I think if anything, there seems to be a sort of bit of a work ethic in my family. Both my sister and my brother work very hard. I've always worked. We seem to be a family of little workers. And my children seem to have inherited that, which is good. I mean, they enjoy it. I have to shake them up sometimes and say, well, let's have some fun. Remember what that was, fun. You know, but they both left home when they were 16. My daughter got accepted by Cheetham School of Music, which is subsidised, because I'm not wealthy. Contrary to my voice, I'm not wealthy. Make this statement now. I don't have connections. I do not have money. And my son left to go to Welbeck College, which used to be an army military training school, but is now a college for all the armed forces and the civil service for engineers. So, which is quite nice. They, despite being sort of what might be kind of being in the outback in Aberystwyth, they have left and explored quite well, and I'm very pleased they have. They're very it's good to get out and get away. I left home when I was 17, and you know, I fully appreciate why they wanted to go off and do something else, which is what they've done, and very successfully. You know, they've been very, very happy and they've gone on their path. Yes, what else?
So what would you say are the most important things to you at the moment in your life?
In my life? Well, contrary to what people think, children actually become more, not more demanding, but their needs are almost greater when they get to early adulthood until they've finally found their feet independently. And their problems at that age are far greater than they were when they were young and they just tripped over. So you really have to work quite hard to gather information and help them in areas that you have no knowledge in. For instance, I do not play a musical instrument, and yet found myself conversing with people, you know, in Cheetahs, you know, musicians of great worth, and then of course in the military, likewise. So I've been quite stretched into areas that I have no sort of knowledge of. And actually my children are still very much a priority. But I suspect in the next 4 to 5 years that will lessen and they will find their way. And then I'll think more about what I'm going to do, which I always joke is sort of go and live in a hut in Crete on the beach just to be somewhere warm and dry. It's not very ambitious, is it?
what are hopes and fears do you have?
Hopes and fears. Well, as any parent, you know, your hopes and fears revolve around your children. If your children are all right and they're happy, then actually you can overcome anything. I don't have any hopes and fears, really. I suppose, in a way, that's why it doesn't really bother me going on. I mean, what is there to fear? There's not a lot. I mean, what's the worst that can happen is you die. You know, I mean, then that's it, isn't it? But that all comes to all of us sooner or later. I think there's been a lot in the news recently about dignitas. And because that's become very important to people when they think ahead about how they're going to die, and I think actually that filters down quite a lot and is in quite a lot of people's mind as the government and these restrictions tighten and your lack of choice of the way you live becomes tighter and tighter, what you choose to do at that time. That's quite an interesting aspect. That's one fear, but that's a very general fear that everyone has. Yes, it's not so much with dignity, but it's with a lot of morphine. I think that's more to the point. My hopes. Well, my hopes are that my children will be happy and find what it is they want with people they want and live how they choose and do well and help other people. If there's anything they can do to make life better for anybody else in the world. I mean, I'm sure I've managed it in any way, except for the people I've come into contact with and maybe hopefully helped in some way. Perhaps that's why you have children, to do the things you didn't manage to do or didn't have the intellect to do or the knowledge or the opportunity, and you hope that they might do it, whatever that was. It's funny, isn't it? I don't know. It's, the whole global warming and people suffering and needing help. Well, whether that's through engineering or music or, I don't know, I mean. I've always thought that actually, before you can help other people, you really do have to help yourself. Otherwise you yourself become a burden. So you do actually have to start close at home. and sometimes you don't get any further. But that's how it is, and you have to accept that maybe you don't have that strength or resources or whatever it is to go that extra mile. But that's very normal. But you do hear of people going the extra mile, doing amazing things and wonderful things. And yes, there's the heroes of our age, aren't they? Some, a lot of them unsung behind the scenes. It's not all always the people that you know of or hear about. But it's the people behind the scenes, yes, that do the work, like yourself. It's all very well being on the plinth, being self-indulgent or entertaining the masses, but it's the people who make it happen. And Anthony Gormley has made this happen, you know. And I think that's, I think it's a very radical idea. I'm not sure anybody else would have been so generous in their conception of that idea, because he hasn't tried to control it, which must say a lot about him, I think, other than health and safety and not inciting the masses and taking your clothes off, which is what somebody did the other day, I heard. Yes, that shows greatness of spirit, I think. And I do love his sculptures, even if they are all him. It doesn't really matter, all these figures all over the place. That's great. It's very human. I think that's what I like, is the human aspect. So I was talking about the face and people, because they are actually far more important than things. Things aren't really very important. I spend my whole life at home trying to throw things out or give them away. There's a horrible accumulation of things in one's life that tie you down and are burdensome. So it would be quite nice not to have anything. I mean, I hope that when I come to the end of my life, I don't actually own anything. How wonderful, isn't it? Not to have anything to worry about at that point. You know, it is all gone. There is just you. I think that's my aim, my ambition, is to leave this world with nothing. How's that?
Finally, how do you feel five, 10, 15 minutes before you go up on?
How will I feel?
How do you feel now being part of the One Another Project, and how do you feel now you're on Trafalgar Square and you're almost going to get this opportunity to stand on the plinth and become part of this project?
Oh, I think it's great. Perhaps this is my only opportunity of life to have said anything I've said just now and have it recorded. Whether anyone will listen to it or not is another matter, or actually take it on board, anything I've said. But yeah, perhaps everyone should have this opportunity if they wish to say something. Not everybody wants to say anything, so, but anybody who does, just to say something. I don't represent any charity, I don't represent anybody, I don't represent where I work or where I live, actually. This really is just me, you know, on my own. As I will be on the plinth. Which is another thing that you have to remember when I was talking about, you know, leaving this world with nothing, is that it will only be you that's going. You're on your own. And on the plinth, you're on your own. So it's a bit of a rerun, maybe. Who knows? Pre-run of that feeling of being on your own. Which is... I don't often experience, really. It's quite nice being on your own. It's quite a treat, actually. So I can understand why people go up there and they just read the newspaper and you think, but a bit of a wasted opportunity. Nice to do something. I'd like to do something. So even if it's any making curtains. And that's a bit tongue-in-cheek, because on my profile I've written, I'm going to produce the finest artwork ever, / lounge curtains, which is a bit of a tongue-in-cheek thing about art. Because art can be anything that you choose it to be, as many contemporary artists have shown. It is anything. And there you are.
Thank you very much.
I don't think